Welcome to the Certainty Advice Podcast, where advice starts with your best interests in mind, helping you achieve more in your financial life. And now, here's your host, founder of the Certainty Advice Group, Jim Stackpool.
G'day everybody, how are you? Jim Stackpool from CertaintyAdviceGroup.com with another podcast on our Certainty series, where I put these together primarily to help you, the listener, and all Australians ideally, understand when they're accessing or not accessing valuable financial advice, which is hopefully truly in your best interests and not the interests of those providing it or in the biases of those that are providing it when they're not in a comprehensive approach, should I say. Our topic today is asking the right questions of your financial advisor considering the amount of change. And so much change has occurred in the financial advice industry and landscape. Banks have exited, compliance has been turned up significantly. And as a consequence, what do we do when we're now sitting in front of our accountant or our industry super fund support provider, or we're buying insurance, or we're thinking about getting a loan, anything to do with a financial decision with a new product or new transition, even going through your own life? What are the questions I should be asking of these people? To help answer that, I'm very lucky to have Annette Pulbrook. Annette is Director, Principal, Certainty Advisor with FinBiz Advisors, finbiz.com.au, up there in gorgeous Warners Bay in New South Wales. You're yet again proving that quality advice is all over Australia, not just simply based in the metropolitans. FinBiz is a firm strong in accounting, strong in financial advice, financial planning. If you'd look at the firm from outside, you'd probably think it's a firm of accountants, but getting in and understanding, they have a very, very different approach to most compliance-based accounting firms. They specialize in SMEs, couples living in around Warners Bay, purely being remunerated on the quality of the advice. Key things to listen as you hopefully listen through to hear what may help you ask better questions of your advisor. Key things to listen is Annette's views on the increasing predominance of what's been called robo-advice and why it's probably misnamed. Also listen to Annette's unique take on, or not take, but concerns when advice relationships are built too much on rapport. I'm dealing with people who are in some ways really good friends, not simply just advisors, and the dangers of this for a whole number of reasons, not simply just as is it actually in your best interests. And also listen for Annette's views on why she believes the self-managed approach is in fact not self-managed at all, or should not be. But I started by asking Annette, considering the change the advice industry has had since Royal Commission, since banks changing and leaving the marketplace, should Australians now be asking different questions of their financial advisors in light of those changes?
I guess from my perspective, Jim, it really comes back to what sort of relationship do you have with your advisor? If you've had a long-term relationship and you've got that level of trust and that level of comfort and there's been no issues, you're not part of one of those big groups that's had a lot of bad publicity, maybe you don't need to ask any further questions because you've already established that relationship, you're already comfortable with what the advice you're being provided, and you know that your advisor's working with you for your long-term goals and benefits. I guess if it's someone who's new to advice or looking for advice or looking to change advisors for whatever reason, that's when perhaps they need to start asking some questions that they may not normally have asked. Again, it comes back to that trusted advisor relationship. You don't want to be best friends with your advisor. You want to know for sure that they're technically competent, but you also, I guess, want to know that you can work with them and that there's someone that you can allow them to deal with your wealth on your behalf, and that that person is doing it for your benefit rather than for theirs, and that's free from conflict and it's in your best interests and it's aligned to what your goals are. So I guess it would depend really if you're a current client of an advisor with a trusted relationship and you're happy with the advice, perhaps you don't need to ask anything further. But if you're new to an advice relationship, then I'd probably make sure that that trust level is there and make sure the technical competence is there, and probably just make sure that you're comfortable with the relationship that you have with the advisor.
I think just drilling in on one point, really important point you've made there, Annette, about you don't want to be the best friend of your advisor. It could be said that over the last 20, 30 years, a lot of people grew and trusted their advisor through really strong advisor rapport, which is a necessary part of the railroad tracks that keep good relationships going. But in some ways, it was all rapport and very little understanding of what might have been going on behind the scenes. And in some ways, I would challenge that the outcomes of some of the Royal Commission of Fees and for No Service, it was a surprise to a number of clients who felt they had good rapport with their advisors. And so they almost were like trusted associates and trusted friends, only to find that for the years that they were paying their advisor, there was very little service, or even worse, the advisor had already checked out of looking after them. And whilst the promises might have been, it's anything I can ever do, don't hesitate to ask, the advisor full well knew that they were paid so much in the first couple of years that they didn't really need, and they knew the client would stick with them until something went wrong. It was the old line, you didn't have to do anything to keep a client. Now, of course, you have to do a lot to keep a client.
And I think being an advisor is very different to being your friend, having that rapport, as you said. You need to be able to have that level of trust but not betray that level of trust. And I think that's what's happened in the past. There's been a bit of complacency in the relationship. The advisor's taken advantage of that. I think from a client perspective, there needs to be a level of accountability. So up front, what are we going to be responsible for as advisors? What are we going to hold the client accountable for? But conversely, on the flip side, what is the client going to hold us as accountable for in helping them achieve their goals and meeting their milestones and making sure that everything's on track to achieve the goals that they want? I think that's probably what has not happened in the past with some of those advisors that are getting into this trouble and being publicised in the media.
And so you're confident that so many new products are becoming available, as the very market we've got at the moment where interest rates are sort of at extraordinary low levels and returns are therefore at similarly low levels on people's funds at a time when they're probably wanting to make sure they're making the best use of money, that the underlying approach that their advisor is taking, they are still sure that is, there's no way that advice is actually in any way conflicted. There's no other benefit coming to the advisor, because we have seen cases in the Royal Commission where the advice was good, etc., but the advisor's business was actually getting highly valued because of the approach, literally from a valuation perspective, because the client's money was going into a product provided by a platform that was supported by a dealer group, would pay that advisor more money simply because it's going into the dealer's platform. Many advisors would still say that's still in their client's best interests in the opinion of the advisor, but there would be an obvious conflict. Are there specific questions that should be asked by Australians who want to just make sure that the advice, the only one getting any benefit and anyone being the only one paying their advisor, in fact, the client, and there's no other benefit from a valuation perspective, a rent subsidy perspective, a product discount perspective, that might be coming to them because of the advice?
Yeah, I think absolutely, Jim. One of the most critical questions would be to very pointedly ask, how do you get paid for your services? And even if you have a little bit of silence there for the advisor to give you detail how to get paid, you want to make sure that they are free from conflict, that there is no kickbacks, that their business is not getting commissions as you just spoke of, or the incentives. Because you want to make sure that when an advisor is giving you advice, it's in your interests and it's for your long-term benefit. The product is just a byproduct of giving the advice and achieving the goals. So to my way of thinking, the product should be completely unrelated to the advice that you're giving. The product is just the means to the end. It's just making sure that you're covering off on the risk, or you're placing them in something to get a return. The ultimate is to make sure that you're aligned to what the client wants to achieve long-term and working with them to achieve those goals. The product is the byproduct of giving you the advice.
Because I'd say also, as a certainty advisor in it, you'd be finding a number of your clients don't have product. The advice is simply advice because they're facing a complexity or a situation or wanting to achieve something that through lack of time, interest, ability, talent, expertise or desire, they need someone, which there's no product solution in it, but it's still quality and valuable advice, which almost goes against the old industry. If there wasn't a product, well, we haven't got a means by which to charge you for the service.
Yeah, but it all comes back to how the client values that, doesn't it? If you're able to solve their complexity, if you're able to help them achieve the goals that no one else can help them achieve, well, what price do you put on that?
And you've also got the other extreme, which is probably as a consequence of some of the mistrust the industry has had. We've had a rise and rise and rise of the DIY investor, the DIY superannuant who's looking after their own destiny. What questions should they be asking themselves now in terms of ensuring that their own advice, self-advice, is the best possible advice for their circumstances.
Yeah, I think that's a bit of a contradiction looking at self-managed, whether it's self-managed investments or self-managed super. If someone's self-managing, then they absolutely need to have the support of a good advisor behind them, because advice is not just about investing. It should cover off things like the risk, the management, estate planning, superannuation, retirement, taxation management, structuring, budgeting, savings, as well as investing. So it covers all of those things. So I guess someone needs to think about, well, do I have the time and the skills to be able to manage those affairs and to cover off on all those key areas? And I guess more importantly, they probably should be saying, well, not what the cost of that advice is, but what does it cost not to have that advice?
Yeah, so you're saying there that, in fact, the self-managed is a misnomer.
Oh, absolutely.
And do they have the objectivity to effectively manage themselves in a way that actually is on the best possible path objectively?
Yeah.
Because we're sometimes blind of our own behaviours or personalities we take towards money that might, in fact, means that we're starting from behind the eight ball even before we put any dollars in.
And they can look at one area in isolation, but it's linked to so many other areas in their life and in their advice path that if they just focus on one area and get that wrong, then it can impact on the rest of their wealth creation into the future. So they need to have that holistic view about their advice and their advice path going forward. And that's where having a good advisor who can actually look at all of those things in conjunction and how they interact with each other can give them that support to move forward. That to me is an investment in good advice. It's not a cost. It's absolutely an investment.
Mm. And then also you can presume that the banks have exited, most of the banks have exited the direct distribution of financial products by tied forces of advisors. But you can bet they're going to come back in the new year and beyond with very strong digital offerings. Are there different questions that the person sitting in front of a screen considering digital offering that's coming across as robo-advice or just advice itself? Are there different questions that Australians should be having before they hit that enter button to say, I'm interested, before they even go too far down a digital path? It's different when I'm sitting in front of a physical advisor.
Oh, gee, I'm really scared of the robo-advice future. I think it will serve a very, very limited number of people. And there's so many other areas that aren't going to be taken into account. So I don't believe that the robo-advice can be that personal advice offering that people are looking for. What do they need to ask? Well, they can't ask questions really, can they, when they're at that robo-advice area? It really does scare me, the future of that robo-advice and the lack of advice that they're going to be getting, or holistic advice.
Yeah, and I think you hear the sort of Spotification story that, well, based upon your past trends and based upon the performance of those trends, we're predicting you'd like product A, B or C, or you should consider about X, Y and Z. Obviously, music selection is very different to future selection and the life I want to live. But
things change, Jim. We all know things change. So you can't have a robo-advice now based on what the future is without taking into account what you want to achieve in the future or what your circumstances may change in the future. And that's where having that close personal relationship, that eyeball contact, that belly-to-belly contact with a real person, a good trusted advisor, can make the difference in your wealth journey into the future rather than just having, you know, tick a box, hit a button, I'm great.
And so that raises different other questions too in terms of helping Australians ask the right ones, because even the nomenclature we use, calling it robo-advice, because I guess the providers of these robo-advice so-called products are really, they're product providers and they're calling it a robo-advice questioning process to sell you a product. So it's pretty, what you're suggesting therefore is that it's just really another form of doing a product recommendation.
Well, I was just going to say, Jim, it's just product. It's not advice. It's just product. It's filling a plug. It's putting a hole in a plug. But as I said earlier, products are the byproduct of doing a good advice job. It's looking at everything holistically with the client, and that's just the end result of it.
There you have it. What do you think? Annette Paulbrook runs a great business, FinBiz Advisors, up there in Warners Bay, New South Wales, just south of Newcastle. What was your take on that? I had three things from this one, from Annette. And the big takeout, which is, again, just reiterating probably what we may already know, is the question is, how do you get paid for the advice you're providing? That's a question we should have. How do you actually get paid? Is it attached to the amount of loan I take out, the amount of superannuation I've got? Is it a flat fee? What's next year's fee going to be? How was that fee determined? What is there components to the fee? This whole just, and it's probably a question in some ways a lot of people have been too polite or too nice to ask, but increasingly it's an absolute vital question. Just like we want to know where our produce comes from, we want to know where's the payment coming from, and is it only getting paid in, ideally for us it's flat dollar fees, and the only one that's in, that is in any way remunerating or there's any incentive is coming from you, the client, no one else. The second point I took away is that, in fact, lots of great advice does not need a product at all. And much of the change that's occurred in the last 12 months has been product-based. There's compliance on product and process on product, products in place that weren't getting service, fee for no service. And, but a lot of great advice, when we face certain complexities, may not need a product at all. And so that's probably a question in itself. Do we need a product to solve the complexity of the issue that we're facing, or could it simply be just pure strategic, as I call it, lack of product advice? The third thing I took away from Annette was this growing use, and it's becoming trendy, the term about robo-advice, which is essentially, as Annette said, it's just a product recommendation. It's very, very little to do with advice. And as Annette was saying, we're too complex as individuals. We're not objective enough. We've got too many things we don't see because we're blind to them. We don't have that natural ability to always see the perspective from the significant others in our financial lives that, whose considerations and issues need to be considered, which robo-advice will just stomp all over. The success of robo-advice was going to ultimately be judged by a sale of a product as judged by based upon the companies that are building them. So always be wary that we always get the behavior that we remunerate. And robo-advice, even though there's an advice word in there, is probably more robo-product recommendations. So as always, find a client advisor that's unconflicted in your search for better, the best possible path for you to be on in your financial life. Certainty advisors like Annette adhere to Australia's highest and only accredited standard for the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission and IP Australia, where we have a standard of advice that they're audited to ensure it's unconflicted and comprehensive in a consistent manner, whether you're dealing with Annette in Moreton's Bay or an advisor in Western Australia or anywhere. So thank you, Annette, Director of FinBiz Advisors. Again, as I say, proving that great advice is everywhere, not just in metropolitan Australia, and also changing the perception of what is professional advice. As always, love to get your feedback. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to having you on our next podcast. Jim Stackpole from Certainty Advice Group signing off for now. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Certainty Advice Podcast with Jim Stackpole. To access all the materials from today's show or to join in the conversation, please head on over to seekingcertainty.com. Please let us know what you think. We'd love to hear your feedback. Seekingcertainty.com.